Flag salute, please.
Thank you.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Shayla, can we have a roll call, please, for everybody that's
Sure.
here in attendance and on the phone this morning?
Yes. Director Polly?
I'm in attendance at the dais.
Director Slauson?
I'm here.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Do we have counsel with us this morning?
That's correct.
Shayla.
Terrific. Thank you. Okay. We'll go to agenda item one, which is reserved for public comment. Any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD, speakers are required to limit comments to 3 minutes. And having no speaker cards and see one raising their hands, we will go on to agenda item two, which is recognitions. A proclamation of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District honoring the life and service of Western Municipal Water District Director Robert Stockton.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board, good morning. We just have on the agenda today a proclamation for the board's consideration to recognize and honor the life and service of Director Robert Stockton, who passed away due to a traffic accident recently. So I will go ahead and read that proclamation. Whereas on December 23rd, 2014, Robert Bob Stockton was elected to the Board of Directors of Western Municipal Water District representing Division One, and most recently served as Western's Board President in 2019. Whereas Director Stockton served on the Joint Ad Hoc Committee between Eastern Municipal Water District and Western, where he was a supporter and advocate for many of Eastern's priority projects, including most recently the North Paris Groundwater Contamination and Remediation Program. In 2012, Governor Jerry Brown appointed Director Stockton to the California Board of Professional Engineers, Land Surveyors, and Geologists. The 15-member board regulates civil engineering, land surveying, geology, and geophysics industries. And whereas Director Stockton held a bachelor's degree in construction engineering from California State Polytechnic University, Pomona, and was a registered civil engineer, and also held a LEED accreditation. Whereas Director Stockton was very actively involved in the Riverside community, serving as chairperson of the Greater Riverside Chambers of Commerce, Riverside Public Utilities Board, Monday Morning Group, a prominent Riverside area advocacy group where he served as chair of the Water Committee and led effective advocacy on key water issues in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. And whereas with great sadness and most sincere condolences, we mark the passing of a water industry leader and community pillar, Robert Stockton, on the 13th day of May in 2020. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed that the Board of Directors of Eastern, on behalf of its management staff, are pleased to honor and celebrate the energetic and vibrant and impactful life of Robert Stockton. So we have this proclamation. I don't know if you want to take a board action on it. Might be nice to, of support, and if the board members would like to say a few words about this.
Sure.
President Sullivan, I'd like to move it. Bob Stockton was a great colleague. I served with him on Monday Morning Group, and a lot of interaction between Western and Eastern, and he will be missed greatly. He was a real public leader and public servant and a real advocate for water in the community. So it's my honor to move the proclamation.
We have a second?
I'll second it.
Sure. I'd like to also add to that that Bob was very active with Eastern on a number of issues, and he truly will be missed because he was a stable and guiding light at the Western Municipal Water District.
And I'd like to add on behalf of staff, he certainly helped facilitate negotiations with Eastern and Western on the North Paris project. Director Sullivan was directly involved with that, and those were difficult negotiations, but he certainly supported the right thing for the community and really helped us come to a great consensus on that to move that project forward. So I would also like to point out from staff his impact at many levels of the organization and the community.
Thank you for that. We have a roll call, please.
Yes, Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Okay. With that, let's go on to the executive reports. Paul?
Thank you, President Sullivan. Good morning, directors. I have a report that's included in your board package. Briefly, I only have a couple of quick items I want to cover today. One, we have a presentation later on today at the board regarding the integrated resources planning process from the Metropolitan Water District to Southern California. Now, we are headlong into that process right now with Metropolitan and its member agencies. One of the interesting things about this is they are starting out the process with a exercise to identify what are called drivers of change. And it's interesting because it's much like when we do our strategic planning process, we always pause at the beginning of that process and saying, what are the big industry game changers? If you can recall, we did things like that. And really, there are the external things that we can't affect that potentially have impact on our water resources planning or business. Metropolitan is taking a similar approach where they're looking at drivers and they're categorizing them in terms of climate change, economic impacts, legislative, regulatory issues, demographics, federal and state policy, technology, things like that that really affect. It's been a very interesting exercise. As you can imagine, both internal and external stakeholders all have an opinion on what those should be, and I want to commend and recognize the Met staff for really pulling that together. And in fact, what they're doing is a process this week where the member agencies, each of the member agencies will do an electronic survey that they're taking the compiled drivers of change, and we will actually rate and rank those and be able to provide that to Metropolitan. So it's been a really great process. You're going to hear more about it in detail later on today. Under past activities, of course, one of the things we've been tracking very closely is the bill SB 1386 by Senator Morlock in Orange County, which would reaffirm our ability under Proposition 218 to lawfully and appropriately charge residents and businesses for fire protection-related services. As you'll recall, 81 agencies in the state of California have been sued under the so-called Driscoll suit, or from the Driscoll firm, challenge our ability to do this. There was some existing case law unpublished that supported our position in our ability to do this, and of course, the Morlock bill simply reflects that case law. I am happy to report that measure is really going through the legislature rather quickly. On June 11th, it passed out of the Senate on a consent, 39-0 unanimous consent vote. And the bill today, and I checked this morning, has no registered opposition. So it's interesting, the trial attorneys who you would think would typically weigh on this bill have not done so yet, but the bill continues to move forward, and I think that's a good resolution for everybody. Last item I want to point out very quickly is this week we're submitting a comment letter to the March Air Reserve Base providing technical comments regarding their study they released on the plume delineation for PFAS at the March Air Reserve Base. It presents very substantial information and study of the plume that's emanating from the former fire training area on the southeast portion of the base. Generally, the report's quite extensive, although we've identified kind of two areas that we think are very important that need to be clarified and or amended in the report. First is the study shows that our well 56 is located in a PFAS plume with concentrations that exceed the Environmental Protection Agency's lifetime health advisory level. The reason that's significant is, as you recall, well 59, we had tested and it showed it was above the lifetime health advisory level, and the Air Force agreed to provide full mitigation for that well, including replacement water and wellhead treatment, which is under construction right now. In well 56, however, they indicated hesitancy to do so because some of the early sampling that well showed lower levels. However, their own study shows that it is above that lifetime health advisory level. And so we're making the point in our response level, our letter, that the Air Force really needs to step up on Well 56 in the same way they did on Well 59. And evidence in their own report is suggesting that. Second, the report indicates that the Moreno Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility may be a potential source of PFAS contamination in the groundwater. They cite contamination in two adjacent monitoring wells. However, the concentrations of PFAS in the effluent of the Moreno Valley plant, which is stored in ponds on the southern portion of the plant site, is almost negligible. And in fact, the monitoring wells are showing level of PFAS that are orders of magnitude higher. So the second point is the location of the monitoring wells are not in an area that would be impacted from the storage ponds on the plant. The groundwater gradient goes in a different direction. So we think it's a physical impossibility that the plant could be impacting those wells and could be causing the contamination that's in those wells. So we're asking for that clarification in their report, and that any references to potential contamination from the Moreno Valley plant be removed. Although we don't suggest or we don't say this is the source, what we think, based on looking at data from the surface water channels, is there may be a circumstance where some of the rising groundwater is mobilizing the PFAS. It's going down the Hecox channel towards the plant, and that is because those are earthen channels, that is going into the groundwater basin, and in fact, impacting those wells. And we suggest that might be where that contamination is coming from, because it's certainly not coming from the plant. And the level of contamination in the Hecox channel is, again, orders of magnitude, you know, hundreds of times higher than any almost non-detectable contamination in our effluent. So we're going to put those in the letter to make sure, and we will follow up with the March Air Reserve Base staff to give them additional information and support on this. Anyway, that concludes my report. Are there any questions or comments?
I have none.
No.
Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Okay, Laura.
Nothing today.
Yeah, I have nothing today.
Okay, Joe.
Good morning, nothing today.
Good morning. I would just like to give the board a real quick update. We had reported a couple months back a damaged siphon, a sewer siphon on Case Road, just northwest of the Paris wastewater plant. This is a section of our sewer system where it goes from a gravity line to a forced gravity underneath the San Jacinto River and then out the other side. And so that pipe runs full for the bulk of the length of the siphon. There's two pipes that make up that siphon structure, a 12-inch and an 18-inch. And the 12-inch had failed. We saw subsidence in the road. It did not result in a spill. It just caused the wastewater to overflow a gate within the manhole and enter the 16 or the 18-inch pipe, which is great. Given the nature of it, we want to be very careful with doing that repair in a manner that doesn't make the problem worse or compound the problem. So we did a bypass pump to get a camera down into the siphon to the extent we could and see what we could possibly do to determine the extent of the damage and the precise location. So we've done that work, and we're gearing up now to actually go back and repair that segment of pipeline. It's going to be, it's our estimate based on what we could see with the camera, probably 35 to 40 feet of sewer siphon that will be replaced. The damage is at the interface where it goes from gravity open channel flow with air in the pipe to submerged and no air. And that interface is where this corrosion has occurred. It's a ductile iron pipe. Our crews are capable of repairing it as long as the damage is where we believe it is going to be found once we excavate. It's going to be about 20-foot deep excavation, so we will be doing a closure of Case Road in coordination with the City of Paris for probably a better part of 2 days. And that's coming up next week, so I just want to, in case you guys should see that or observe that and make you aware of what's going on there. And that'll be it. Thank you.
So that's under Case Road, not the river, huh?
It's under the river.
Under the river.
Oh, it's
parallels.
It's in the road, but crossing under the river.
We have to.
The problem is.
Oh, so we don't excavate in the river?
No, it's just on the extreme side of the ridge abutment. We believe it's going to be to the north of the abutment, northwest of the abutment. So if it gets to the abutment, it's going to turn into a larger, much more difficult problem, and we'll probably have to solicit the help of outside contractors and engineering.
So. Thank you.
So don't drive on Case Road.
Really? Because I do on occasion. All right. With that, I'll accept a motion and a second for approval of on the consent calendar number 4 for items 4A through 4N, unless there's anyone wishing to pull an item.
I'll move the consent calendar.
I'll second.
And I think that was the second from Mr. Corona, Director Corona.
Correct.
Okay. We have a roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Okay. It's been motion approved unanimously. Let's go to agenda item 5, which is the action calendar. 5A is to approve a proposed biennial budget update and fiscal year 2019-2020 and fiscal year 2020-2021. Laura.
Good morning, directors. I'm pleased to present our mid-cycle budget review with you. I know you're used to seeing Charles Turner here to discuss budget, so I hope to be as sparkly as he usually is. The board approved the two-year budget last June, and we begin the whole budget process even 6 months before that. So we're a year and a half into projections that we made. And so we'd like to look back and see how we did to budget this past year, and then consider if we need to make any adjustments or tweaks to year two of the budget. So today, I'll be going over how we prepare the update. And also, we had a little thing called COVID that we needed to include in this analysis. And then we'll go over each of the operating, non-operating highlights, including capital and operating fixed assets. And then we'll overview the two-year summary. So the update process starts with review of our actual operating results, capital and operating fixed asset expenses for the 19-20 year. And utilizing these actuals, we look forward and look at sales trends and expense projections and any other pertinent facts or factors to forecast results for our upcoming year two of the budget. So in addition, as we mentioned to the board back in May, we plan to prepare a financial model to project possible outcomes of COVID-19. And before Charles left, I locked him in a room and he completed that model for us. So we were able to utilize it for this forecast. So we'll be giving you a teaser of that forecast, but we'll be bringing it back to you in July with more details. We'll be bringing all the customer data results from COVID with you with it as well. But the outcome from today's presentation is to present the recommended adjusted budget for board approval. So here's our teaser of the financial model.
You might want to mention what slide you're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, on the phone. So I'm on slide 4, and this is a teaser of our financial model. We will bring to you in July, and as I mentioned, we'll go over customer data results from COVID. So the model allows for multi-scenarios for COVID-19 impacts. In this case, we included two scenarios. The green column is our forecast impact that we kind of utilized for this budget review. And then we also included the severe impact, that's the yellow column. So in evaluating this model, a range of impacts to critical budget parameters, and so they're circled in red, so our water sales obviously is important, property taxes and standby fees, connection fees, and write-offs. And so we looked at where we thought potentially the impacts of COVID could impact us, and we are including those in developing our mid-year adjustments. So in addition, you'll see that yellow, that gray column, and that's the Great Recession high. And we want to just kind of compare for reasonableness to see if what we're kind of considering for the forecast impact, how it gauged. And we really believe that our forecast impact is relatively conservative, and we probably will come in better than this. We believe this because of the deep impacts of the recession were mainly due to the housing crisis. And with COVID, it's looking a bit different. While we had a drop in sales in May, I think it was in the news today, because of the quarantines, they're seeing a pickup of escrows opening in June. So this is something we obviously will need to continue to monitor, but right now we feel comfortable after talking to Corey Wallace that he believes we'll have about a 13% drop in connection fees for 2021.
Laura, before you move on, strict record, this information, what really jumps out at me is our recession high of 103,000 acre feet of water sold, and now we're just our baseline is 88,000. I mean, that's remarkable. Is that how much do you attribute to the recession, and how much to all the conservation that we've implemented since then?
Randy, I think most of that is based on the conservation and water use efficiency, as well as, you know, additional local projects and groundwater production. So I think, you know, you're just seeing, as we've talked about several times, we're seeing structural water use efficiency on a per capita basis in the range of 20%. So this kind of scans with that very closely.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It's really it's a real eye-opener.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the water sales didn't go up a little bit, because everybody was concerned about having to wash your hands 20 times a day, and there was going to be increased water usage, and, you know, lo and behold, we're not really seeing that. And, you know, I just think that when we look at what we did in 2007, 2008 versus today just shows you the ability of the district to manage the water portfolio and how much we pick up from conservation and water use efficiencies.
And we believe, again, this sent those circled numbers we're putting in and proposing for the next year's budget. We believe they will probably not come in that low, the impact's that severe, so we think this is a conservative approach to it. But, you know, our sales are tracking around there right now. But we feel very comfortable with these numbers. But we don't expect to see a huge dip in sales. You know, one thing that's very important is we are predominantly residential. Our sales are predominantly residential, so there may be some fall off in commercial sales, but as you point out, there's been a lot of people at home, and so we're seeing kind of a semi-balancing of that. So we feel this is, to assume a 5% reduction in sales is conservative. Thank you.
Thanks. So this slide outlines the proposed operating and non-operating budget adjustments for year two, fiscal 2021. And we, as I mentioned, we incorporated the revenue adjustments from the model that we just went over. So on the operating revenue and expense side, we incorporated the 5% reduction in water sales, or $5.9 million. And also, we increased write-offs from $200,000 to $1 million, and reduced our tax and standby revenue by $200 million. But offset to that, we also reduced water purchase expense due to the lower sales demand by $4.6 million. And also, we're offsetting some, while it's not substantial, other administrative expense adjustments. We're kind of really being mindful of our discretionary spending, saving wherever possible. We've noticed a drop in, obviously, our sponsorships, our travel. We've capped merit increases for our executives. So we're doing everything that we can to kind of be mindful about discretionary spending. On the non-operating revenue and expense side, as I mentioned, we're reducing the connection fees for fee revenues by $6.5 million, or 13%. To offset that, we're also adjusting our debt expense by $4 million. Very similar to this year, we had savings on our debt expense. And recently, as you're aware, we took advantage of an excellent time in the market to refinance our bonds. So between that and our lower interest costs, we're able to reduce our debt expense by $4 million. So I apologize in advance. This is a very busy chart. But it really, when you talk about numbers, there's no other way to really present it. So we tried to make it a little bit more simple. So the colored boxes correspond with numbers highlighted in the chart. And then there's six columns of numbers. The first three represent our 1920 results, and the second three columns represent our proposal for 2021. So the green box we talked about, it's the lower operating revenues, write-offs, property taxes, and sales water sales. And then the blue box and the numbers represent our connection fees. So we'll have a $2 million lower revenues in 20 and $6.5 million lower than budget in 2021. So, but then, as I mentioned, we offset that while we have a $15 million decrease in revenues, we conversely look at the expenditure side, and we have reduced water purchases, and we have the reduced debt expense for total expenses reducing by $8.6 million, and you'll see that in the red box. And even with reducing all the expenses by $8.6 million, we're still going to be able to fund our $19 million OPEB contribution because we want to continue to reduce that liability. And lastly, I just want to highlight the plum box, or it looks kind of gray on the screen, to highlight the net operating margin because that's really important, which shows very positive results. $24 million higher than budget will be ending this fiscal year. And while $6 million lower than budget in 2021, we're still going to end the year positive with a total net margin of $56 million for the year. And after capital and debt service payments that we apply against that net margin, we most likely will be building reserves. So we'll move into the capital program budget. And I'm going to briefly go over the top, but I'll let Joe bail me out if I start going off track. The chart shows an increase in fiscal year 2020 of $3.6 million, and in year two, $3.3 million, which represents about a 4% increase over the 2 years. There are mainly two drivers that are driving that increase. In 1920, we have the Paris II desalter, and we've accelerated that project schedule and pace of construction, so the dollars are going out the door a little quicker, but the project's progressing quicker. We exceeded the originally forecast spending, but the board did approve some change orders that were necessary. And then in year two, it's all great news why we're increasing the budget. We received the $44.5 million grant for the Paris North groundwater program. And we didn't have this project in the original budget that was approved last year. So with receiving the grant revenues, we wanted to program this project in. And so Joe and John Ward were able to kind of redistribute projects and really prioritize the projects. And even with that project, we're only increasing the budget by $3.3 million or 3.7%. So that's all that I'll say, but I don't know if, Joe, you want to add anything to this?
No, Laura, I think you covered it well. I would just add that when we budgeted originally for the solar phase three, we did not anticipate that we were going to have favorable proposals for all five sites at 15.9 megawatts of generation. We had budgeted for three out of the five, but once we received the power purchase agreement proposals, they were very favorable financially to the district. So we decided to move ahead with all five sites, and there were grading costs that were incurred this past year. So that's part of it, is that we in fact had very favorable PPA proposals that we received.
So we'll move on to our operating fixed asset budget. And this chart shows the budget for the year, and we are about $13 million below budget at the end of 2020. And there are two main reasons for that under budget. First off, vehicles, they take a long lead time to bid, fabricate, and deliver. So it's very common that we have a carryover from year to year because we're in the midst of all that whole process. Also for IT and operations and maintenance, we have a lot of approved projects, and while our staff does their best to try and project how much we'll get done in 1 year, it never fails that projects get pushed a little bit, either for timing or for COVID, and we have to carry over some of those projects into the next year. So of the $13 million that were under budget, we are requesting to carry over $12 million for vehicles and projects. And between the 2 years, we are reducing the OFA budget by $1.2 million, or 2.3%. And the reduction of $1.2 million in the OFA budget is mainly a reduction of $1 million in IT needs, and also we're deferring or removing from the budget non-essential vehicle purchases. So there were, you know, a van pool van, and there was a sedan for the pool vehicles, and we just decided that our vehicles are in pretty good shape. If we push that off for a year or two, that wouldn't be too much of a problem. And on the operations and maintenance OFA, they'll remain the same in total, but they have reshifted some of the priorities to fund the Paris desalter gas flare. So this slide wraps everything together. Slide 13, I apologize, I haven't been reading the slide numbers. It wraps everything together to show the two-year budget cycle with the proposed adjustments and the overall effect. So we did another color coding to try and help kind of clarify what's going on in this slide. The blue numbers that are circled, really those represent the total fiscal year 2019 and 2021 revenue lower by $13 million or 1.7% to budget. The expenses are $30.7 million or 4.8% below budget. And so the green circled number really represents the two-year resulting net operating margin, which is 17.7 below, better than budget. So that's really a significant number, that even with the reduced revenues that we're going to experience, we're really cutting costs to improve our margin. Capital, we've talked about how the 5.7 million or 2.6% over the 2 years is really resulting from those two major projects. And lastly, just overall, just looking at our overall operating and capital expenditures, they're lower by about 25 million or 3%. So this is our very familiar donut charts that highlight on the left the funding sources that we use. And on the right, the funding uses, how we spend our dollars. It's a graphical version of the previous chart that we just overviewed. Just to close, I just have a few final comments. The district's health and performance we don't believe will be severely impacted as a result of COVID-19, and we'll bring back more information on that. We don't feel that we need to pull back on our capital plans, because our net margins are very strong. Our bids are coming in very favorably, and also we're providing jobs to the local economy with the construction projects. And lastly, we'll continue to look for savings in our discretionary costs and keep an eye on travel, sponsorships, and deferring any other non-essential purchases. So with that, it ends my formal presentation. We're just asking for the board to approve the proposed operating, non-operating capital, and operating fixed asset budget adjustments for fiscal year 2021. With that, we'll answer any questions.
Do you have any questions of directors and staff?
Yeah, I do, President Sullivan. I want to reinforce what Laura said on the CIP, and I think it's right on the money. We're getting good bids. Interest rates are low, and an opportunity to try to help keep people employed is really important. And we're also very fortunate, partly fortunate and partly because of hard work, that we have grant money to spend. So I would agree that if anything, we should accelerate as much as we can the CIP part of it. I think what you presented here is very good. I like the taking another look at different areas of our budget and seeing what we can defer and not defer, and compared to the 2007-08 recession. I agree. I think we're in good shape. So I'm very pleased with this. I'd move the recommendation.
I just had one question for Laura, and it sounds like it was de minimis, but I mean, we did have some changes here, getting work from home, all that. Are we ever going to get some sort of accounting number for what that cost us, or if there was any cost to it, or it had any marginal changes to anything?
Well, I'll answer that, and I'll let the rest of the executives answer. But we really, because we were able to be effective and still produce at home, I can speak for my department, things just kept churning. So we didn't have to set people up with technology. People were able to use their own technology. And so from an administrative side, there wasn't a significant cost. In fact, we're having savings because no one can travel and no one can go to conferences. Yeah. But on the operational side.
I was going to add to what Laura said. Have we had some small incremental expenses for technology? Mm-hmm. For sanitizing the site, additional cleaning, those types of things. Sure, but if you look at the costs savings we've had because no one's gone to conference, no one's traveled, our travel budget's way down, and you look at also those numbers relative to a $360 million budget, it's de minimis. It's quite de minimis. I don't know what you guys think.
I agree, and from an engineering perspective, I think there's a number of lessons learned having gone through this. There's a number of efficiencies, I think, that we've realized. For example, we've gotten very efficient at virtual meetings. So mm-hmm. instead of a consultant billing the district for an hour of commuting to come out and meet with us, mm-hmm. and then an hour back to their office, we're able to very effectively discuss projects via virtual meetings. And so there's some efficiencies and some savings that actually were realized on projects. So I think there are some long-term lessons learned that we can incorporate going forward.
Now, that, I guess that was my point, is that first of all, hats off to the management here for being able to take a real curveball and make it work here. But the fact that we, as Joe said, probably learned some ways of doing things that are going to save us money in the long run. And it might be that we need to invest a little more in some of our technology equipment and better streaming services or whatever that is. But I think long run, we managed the crisis. And again, hats off to the management for doing that. But it had very little impact, which I think you could have told us in the middle of March. We could have planned for a worst-case scenario that was going to have a lot of impact on our district, and it so far hasn't. So, again, I just wanted to say thank you for a job well done.
No, I'd like to echo that, because I also hear from the development side of the community, and other than the first 2 weeks when everything got shut down, there was a little couple of bumps in the road or whatever, but everybody's been extremely pleased. And they're finding, in many cases, things are getting completed a little quicker than it would have been had everybody been here. So I think that there's been some real efficiencies in what we do here, and staff is to be commended for that. So lessons learned, I think it'll just prove to be beneficial as we move forward. Thank you.
I'll second okay. the item, then, I guess it was... Moved. I'll second it.
All right. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan.
Aye.
Director Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
Motion approved unanimously. Let's go to 5B, which is approve and authorize the administrative award of agreements and task order assignments for the removal of excess soil at the district facilities. Dan.
Thank you, President Sullivan. Yes, so for consideration by the board this morning is a recommendation to change the strategy or the approach that we utilize for the sale and marketing of excess soil that we accrue at some of our locations. So a little bit of background here. The origin of that excess material typically is a result of capital improvement projects. Generally, the construction of recycled water ponds and storage facilities, or pond maintenance and repair that occurs periodically over time. Our primary objectives in dealing with the material is really to return the facility to its pre-existing state, to remove the excess or the stockpile from the location. It's also to minimize community disruption, ensure that we're not creating a hazard or other challenges for the local residents or community in the area of the excess material, as well as to secure a financial return from the sale of the soil. So just by way of background, our process that we follow for the disposition of the material is to solicit bids. We would go out to bid for excess soil. That may occur when a project is completed, for example, if the completion of a construction or a CIP project for the construction of a pond, or as development interests occur. So if we have material and we are made aware of needs for soil, we will solicit proposals at that time for that sale. We then seek board authorization for the sale if the transaction is greater than $100,000. We secure the hauling contract, contractor's insurance and security deposits, and ensure their safety procedures are in line and they have the appropriate permits. And then, as I'll mention here, typically we end up rebidding based on remaining volumes. So what are the challenges that we experience? First of all, the development projects that may be out there don't necessarily coincide directly with our availability of soil. So
So we complete a project or maintenance at a location. There may not be a need for soil at that time, so we stockpile. Also, under the current approach, the hauler, the contracted provider, controls access to that location for the duration of their contract, and that occasionally becomes problematic as well. And then what that results in is excess material that remains, and I'll give you an example here momentarily, and also lost opportunities with other haulers or developers that might have interest in that material, but it's currently locked up by a particular contractor. So just by way of example, you know, the single largest project that we've undertaken in many years, if not ever, is the North Trumbull Road stockpile we have here just adjacent to this facility. In all, there was slightly over 1 million cubic yards of material that was a result of the construction of the recycled water ponds. Those projects were completed in 2017. And primarily, we last entered into a contract in 2018 with a hauler for the removal of 850,000 yards of the material over a two-year term. And as security for that, or to ensure the performance of that contract, we obtained a fairly significant bid deposit, non-refundable deposit of 30% of the bid total for the sale, thinking that was a good security for that removal of that amount of material. However, we are nearly complete with that project. It expires in June this month, and only 367,000 yards have been removed thus far under that contract. We'll keep the retention, but we still have 500,000 yards of soil to remove, and again, our goal is to get rid of that stockpile. So I'll quickly go through our recommended approach and our strategy in dealing with this. We think this is going to provide a more expeditious means of getting rid of soil, not only at this location, but others as they may occur. So what we're proposing is maintaining a pre-qualified list of haulers. And what I mean by that is entering into these master agreements that we're recommending the approval of today with haulers that have expressed interest to do removal from any of our locations at any time. It's a master agreement, and in that they agree to our terms, our conditions, our insurance requirements, our safety requirements, and they are effectively pre-qualified to do work, remove soil for the district. We would then establish a market-based rate, and I'll show you on a slide here momentarily what we're recommending for the Trumbull Road stockpile. But that rate generally varies by the, well, it does vary by the location of the project itself. So we believe this is a fairly attractive location. Some of our other facilities, Alessandro Ponds out in the San Jacinto area, maybe not as attractive from a logistical standpoint, therefore it commands lower rates. And I'll show you an example of that here momentarily. We would then award task orders to haulers, developers, on a first-come, first-served basis. So we have the master agreement in place. A hauler developer has a project. They obtain the necessary permits and requirements from the local jurisdictions. They present that as evidence to us of a need. We issue them a task order. They begin removing material. At this current location, at the Trumbull Road location, we believe we can simultaneously operate two contracts at the same time for removal of soil. We did that for our own needs along with the activity for our Phase 3 solar project. We had two operations effectively going out of there simultaneously. That may or may not be the case depending on the location, but we do believe we can accommodate that here. And then importantly, if a hauler ceases activity for a defined period of time, that period of time would be defined in their agreement, that the task order then becomes void. And what that does is help us prevent a contractor from locking up access to that material from others. That's the primary benefit of that. So I mentioned the rates here. This table provides a five-year summary of some of the rates that we've received at various locations throughout the district. These aren't big numbers, even, you know, considering the scope of the North Trumbull Road Pond location. These were all competitively bid. We're receiving 33 cents a cubic yard, you know, a million yards, that's $300,000 for the district over time if we were to move it all. So really, again, our goal is to honor our commitment to the local community and to return that site to its pre-existing state and to remove that stockpile. But for this location, we are recommending that we initiate this process, should the board approve it, with a 50-cent per yard fee for the soil. We do believe this is an attractive location, and that that rate is likely to be desirable to the community. Should it not be, we can always adjust. We can always bring that rate down. So what do we expect to benefit from this? So again, I think this greatly improves our ability to eliminate the tying up and the access of material to others that might be interested. It provides availability to others based on current needs. Someone has a hauling permit, they're ready to go, first come, first serve, they've got their master agreement, we have all of their information in place, away they go, they begin hauling material. It advances our primary objective, again, to remove the stockpiles from the various locations. And it streamlines our administrative process. We're not constantly going out to bid, whether or not there is development activity going on. And we basically are simply making people aware we have this master agreement process in place. And President Sullivan, you mentioned in the administrative committee about the BIA. I looked into that following the committee meeting. We do send notifications currently on every opportunity that becomes available to the BIA. So that process is being accommodated today, and we will continue to do that and make them aware of the locations of our soil going forward. So our recommendation with this is for the approval and authorization by the board for the administrative award of master agreements with haulers and developers that have an interest in either current or future needs for soil, and then to authorize staff to perform periodic market-based rate adjustments for the sale of that material, again, based on the geographic location and the activity, the development activity at that time. With that, I would be glad to answer any questions.
Go ahead. Mr. President?
Yes, go ahead, Dave.
Yes.
Director Lawson.
I don't have so much a question as I guess a statement. Based on my experience, haulers traditionally find landowners that need dirt hauled away, and then also landowners that need dirt. So they end up charging both parties, and they work out the amounts. So I think the fact that Dan's been able to get and staff's been able to get anything for the dirt is really positive. But I would also, I guess, advise that we should be flexible so that, you know, if we can get more at a particular time based on where the project is, we keep that in mind as well. So I think this is great. I think we've done a good job here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, and I assume that the district gives these haulers the soils report, because some of these jurisdictions,
yes,
require what kind of soils being imported.
Absolutely. They have the ability to come in, test, do their own analysis of the materials at any time.
Oh, but we don't have one? I mean, it's not available to them? Everybody's got to come
project,
in and do a soils report?
It would be for this, because we have that on file. So, yes, if a maintenance activity occurred and we created a new stockpile at some location, yes, there would be testing done.
Super. All right.
Okay.
I'll move the item.
We have a second.
Second. This is Dave Floss.
Second, and roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion is approved unanimously. Let's go to 5C, which is approve and authorize agreements with Jacobs Engineering Group Incorporated for $392,440 and Water Systems Consulting Incorporated for $360,000. For the hydrological consulting services.
President Sullivan, our Director of Water Resources and Facilities Planning, Brian Powell, will be presenting this item. He is on the line. Brian?
Thank you, Joe. Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. My department is experiencing considerable backlog of groundwater development projects, and so we've targeted the use of consultants to help us meet the gap of our resource needs. So our backlog is primarily due to significant increases in the projects and programs that we've been moving forward. We've been successful at getting grant funding for a lot of this work, and the department has a limited number of specialized staff able to complete the work. So we talked to Jacobs and WSC, who are on our as-needed services list, and interviewed some of their technical staff and identified that they had the technical resources that would be able to support us. So going to slide three, please. The projects and programs that we have, the largest one is the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Prevention Remediation Program. This program has a very tight deadline due to the grant requirements. And so we've been advancing planning studies and groundwater modeling in pursuit of this work. So we're still in process of those. And then in the near future, we need to be drilling up to 9 extraction wells and 20 monitoring wells, all within a very tight deadline. We also have groundwater modeling work going on with the Army Corps, work on the Paris II reverse osmosis facility, and other projects and programs ongoing. On slide four, the proposed hydrogeological consulting services would be for a period of 1 year, and the consultants would provide project oversight, help us with new production wells and monitoring wells that need to be drilled, groundwater modeling studies, and et cetera. Then on slide five, so we recommend that the board approve and authorize execution by the general manager of the district standard contract with Jacobs Engineering for hydrogeological consulting services amount not to exceed $392,440, and execution by the general manager of the district standard contract with WSC for hydrogeological consulting services in an amount not to exceed $360,000. So if there's any questions, Matt?
Do they have any questions of staff?
No, I would move staff recommendation. Steve Corona.
I can't hear him.
Yeah.
Director Corona, could you speak up? Maybe we can couldn't hear.
I'm moving the staff recommendation.
Oh. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. We have a roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion is approved unanimously. We'll move to agenda item 5D, which is approve and authorize an award of contract with Pacific Hydrotech Corporation for $4,487,032 under specification number 1399W. For the Pat Road booster engines replacement and with an additional appropriation of $5,985,700. Okay, Sean, morning.
Morning, President Sullivan. Good morning, members of the board. As indicated, this is a construction award for the Pat Road booster station engine replacement project. Pat Road is located in French Valley. This is a critical facility for the district, serving approximately 40,000 customers in Menifee, Sun City, and Romoland. As you can see on the slide, it was constructed in 1992. As again, critical and large, 40,000 gallons a minute, supplying the 1627 pressure zone. It's an interesting station in that it has both gas-fired engines to drive the pumps and electrical motors. So the existing Genbarker engines, as you can see in the picture, have reached the end of their useful life. The company's no longer supporting them. Spare parts are near impossible to get, hence why we've launched the project. So the scope is to replace those two engines, with new Caterpillar engines that are readily available, and install a Tecogen emission control system. Because it is a critical facility, to install permanent emergency backup power at the site, just in case everything goes wrong. And keeping with the district's policy of being a good neighbor, there's new development starting in the area, so we're going to install noise mitigation measures to maintain our low profile out there in the community. And as this is a critical facility, part of the construction contract is to supply bypass pumps during construction so that we can maintain operation no matter what the scenario. Our schedule, should the board approve and award the contract, will start next month after all the paperwork, bonds, insurance are in from the contractor, with a completion date scheduled for October of 2021. The bids, we advertised those on April 30th. We opened them on June 3rd. We received four bids from qualified contractors. Our lowest responsible was from Pacific Hydrotech in the amount of $4,487,033. It was 13% below the engineer's estimate, right about where we expect them to be. I'd like to see those in the 10 to 15% range. So very happy with the numbers that came in. So Krieger & Stewart was our engineer during construction, and we would like to maintain their services, during design. We'd like to maintain their services during construction. The scope of work is indicated, with primary focus going to be on the submittal review. The engines are a complicated piece of equipment, and we want to make sure that everything is per the design spec. The negotiated fee for those services is $627,500. And that brings us to our recommendation. So our recommendation is an award to the construction contractor, an award to Krieger & Stewart, administrative award of any other necessary consulting services, and the additional appropriation. That brings me to the end of the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Have any questions? Any questions from...
I tried to get in there earlier, but I have to recuse myself on this item because my family does business with Krieger & Stewart.
Can't hear.
Director Corona, you're barely audible. You know, you maybe might try calling back in.
On the phone.
Pardon?
Paul, this is District Council. I believe Director Corona identified a potential conflict due to a relationship with Krieger and Stewart.
That's correct.
Given the technological, I believe Director Kroner is calling in, so he can't leave the dais, but to respect the requirements of the Political Reform Act, I'd recommend that he just remain silent on this item, and I think he's, by giving us notice that he may have a potential conflict, it's tantamount to him leaving the dais at this point. So I think the board can proceed without Director Corona.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Council.
For that, Council.
Yeah, President Sullivan, I have a question and a comment. I'm having difficulty hearing a lot of people today. Jeff Wall could barely hear, and this last presentation was difficult to hear, so I don't know if it's a technical issue. But I do have a question on the presentation, and that is, it seems pretty straightforward, but well over a year to complete the plan. Can you kind of walk me through why it takes so long?
Yes, no problem. The project started out as a strict engine replacement project, and as we started reviewing it and going through it, we also spent some time investigating on whether keeping the gas-fired engines was the most economical project for the district, or to switch them all to electric driven. So that analysis took some time. Further, as indicated with the development community moving through, with development area, we also added another scope item to do the noise mitigation design. So all of those things added up to not just make it a strict engine replacement. Because particularly with the noise mitigation, it requires some structural modifications and additions to the building.
Director Record, this is Jeff Wall. Can you hear me now?
Much better, Jeff.
Okay, sorry. I would also add, I think you're also asking about the construction duration. These engines that we're purchasing have a 6-month long lead time. And because of the need to have standby pumping capacity, we have to stage the construction so that we always have duty and standby capacity, so we can only do one engine at a time. So that leads into the duration of the project that you see here.
Okay, that answers my questions. I'll move the item.
All right, thank you.
Second it.
Yeah, I just had one other comment. You know, I think this is something that we can all learn by. This is under a specific plan out there, and it's a major facility, and we have actually houses almost right up adjacent to it, which maybe creates some issues. But perhaps sometimes in the future, where we have some major installations like this and we have vacant ground around it, that we engage ourselves in a little review of what that facility looks like, so that we do some of this stuff before we get into, you know, maybe disrupting a lot of folks out there. You know, roads and everything else has been a problem out there for the last 9 months or a year because of putting in all the infrastructure. And so it's not a complaint, just something that we can learn by, that this one is also. And then also, I think at some point it should be incumbent upon the developer to give us a copy of their white reports to make sure that we have adequate setbacks for some of this stuff, because people only get notified at the original sale. You know, 10 years, 15 years down the line, somebody buys a home that's next to it or two houses away and complains about the noise. You know, then, we have to go answer that. It shouldn't be our issue once we start doing some of this stuff. And that's been an issue, no matter back when we put in the sewer plant and Sun City, you know, there was nothing around it, and then all of a sudden there's houses next to it. Developer knew, you know, but the second buyer didn't know, you know. So it's just something we can learn by. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we have a motion?
Randy moved it. I second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Let it be known that this is a 4-0 vote with Director Corona abstaining because of potential conflict of interest. With that, let's go to agenda item 6, which is the information item. We'll go through the first one, and then we'll take a 10-minute break. So we'll do the financial, operating, and capital highlights through the third quarter of fiscal year 2019-2020.
Back again. So our last report was looking forward, and this report we're looking backward. We prepared our quarterly third quarter financial report. We reviewed these results with the admin committee on June 4th. The report includes our key variances and operational highlights. So with that, I'm going to just get right into the report. So from a consolidated enterprise, overall, our consolidated revenues were under budget 1.9%, and expenses were also below budget, but by 8.7%. Our water service revenues was lower than budget by 7.5% due to acre feet sales less than budget by 14.4%. Again, connection fees for 5,134 EDUs through quarter three were $2.5 million higher than budget. And our total operating expenses of $147 million were under budget by 4.5%, resulting in a net operating margin exceeding budget by $26 million. Let's just round up. So now moving into each of the services, our water service, as I mentioned, 14.4% below budget, mainly due to a wet winter. Domestic water sales were $2.7 million below budget. Our revenue was 7.5% below budget, and our total operating expenses were 4.4% below budget. Net operating revenue to fund our capital commitments were $4.2 million lower than budget and $2.3 million lower than the previous year. Also, our ag water sales were $5.8 million below budget. All of this was just due to the wet winter. But what offsets it is our purchase water costs are also down by $6.8 million. This is the information that I just went over, but it's in tabular form. I'll just highlight the last two columns that relate to, and I'm on slide 7, the actual as compared to prior year. And what you'll notice is we have an increase from fiscal year 18-19. We sold more acre feet water, plus the increase reflects our January 2020 rate increase. We have a corresponding increase in the purchased water that year as well, about 9.7%. Now on our wastewater side, we benefit from a wet winter on slide 8. Our treatment flows were up 1.4 million gallons per day, totaling 45.4 million gallons. And our wastewater revenue was up 4.1 million or 5.4%. And coincidentally, our operating costs were $2.5 million lower than budget. So overall, wastewater really did well through the third quarter. Net operating revenue was $6.6 million above our budget and $1.7 million above prior year. The highlights relating to our reduction in operating costs relate to chemicals and sodium hypochlorite expense were lower than budget by almost $1 million due to favorable pricing on those chemicals. And also treatment costs at the Temecula Valley plant. You know, it was the first year of operation, so staff did their best to do budgeting, but there was really no historical data to utilize. We had unplanned maintenance to repair the Warm Springs lift station, and then our electricity expense is higher than budget due to some solar credits that we had to recognize last year. From the tabular form on slide 9, the only thing that I would highlight is just noticing the million gallons per day at the bottom of the screen. We're $1 million higher than million gallons per day higher than last year, and also compared to budget. So it's just very good results here on the wastewater side. On the recycled water service, it is affected by a wet winter. Our acre feet sold is below budget, but our revenue is above budget, and that's mainly because of the additional retrofit customers that we've added, so more customers are using recycled water. And our operating costs were in line with budget by about $5.6 million. Pass through that. On our general administrative expenses, total G&A were $4.2 million, or 13.4%, but below budget, and I'm on slide 12. And the reduction or better than budget results really relate to a few different items. Outside service expenditures were below budget expenditures by $1.2 million. And as I mentioned in our budget presentation, the PGA area, just their expenses are way down. No events. The education program that includes busing is very, you know, is costly to send the buses out with the students. We haven't had any of those costs. And also, projects in process, some of the things have kind of been pushed out with the COVID situation. We've had a financial participation charge fee study that we're going to be starting up, but it got delayed about a month. And then also our electric computer equipment and furniture expenses are slightly above budget. And this is just really relating to an accounting policy. We now capitalize all of our assets over $5,000. And I think previously we used to capitalize a smaller dollar IT monitors and so forth, and it's just not best practice or efficient to do that. And our labor expense was below budget due to 34 vacant positions at the end of March 2020, and we also had delays in implementing the class and comp study, which was ultimately implemented when we approved the MOU. Moving on to slide 13, just want to, you know, just emphasizes our strong reserves. You'll notice a dip in September that really relates to cash outflows relating to our CalPERS contributions and debt service payments, but then a gradual growth through March 30 relating to reimbursements for our capital expenditures that come back into our operating cash from the SRF loans, and also receipt of property tax revenues. This slide shows our EDU sewer connections. The line graphs are very helpful. I really enjoy this graph. The blue X represents our actual fixed fiscal year 19 numbers of EDUs. The red box represents our budget, and in between is our actual cumulative EDUs. So you can tell by looking at the green triangle, we're still ahead of budget, but you can see that the lines are narrowing. May 2020, we wound up with 174 EDUs, and if you compare that to last May, we had 301 EDUs. And for next quarter, if we stay on track, for the end of the quarter, June 30, if we stay on track, we'll be slightly below budget or at budget for the end of the year. This chart just shows by area how we're tracking on EDUs. The blue line represents the actual EDUs, and the red line represents the budget. You can see they've kind of merged here at the end of the third quarter. Our 24 million we budgeted, and our actual revenues are about 24 million. Predominantly, the new EDUs are more EDUs are going into the Menifee and Temecula area. They're showing more the most growth. This just summarizes all the different services in a tabular form. The moving into capital. Sorry, I went too far. This is the OFA budget. We covered it pretty heavily in our budgeting discussion, but we talked about the vehicles and why it's at 20% at the third quarter, just the lead time and getting the vehicles purchased. As of March, 58 of the 80 had been ordered. They were releasing bids within the last couple of weeks, so by the end of the year, 69 of the 80 vehicles that we plan to purchase will be on order by the end of June, so we'll be getting them in next fiscal year. And I mentioned the delay or deferral of non-essential vehicles, that's included as well. And I discussed the delay of some of the projects, that the coins replacement project, and will be carried over to next year. On the capital improvement project, this is the shining star. I love this slide. It shows that we are right on target. We're on track perfectly. 76% of our projects are complete in three quarters of the year. You do the math, it's awesome. So John Ward will normally give an update with his key metrics on the details of the capital, but our projects are going very smoothly. So in summary, our consolidated results show that our total operating revenue is slightly below target by 2.1%, but our total operating expenses are lower than target by 4.5%. Our water revenue is below target, and our water purchases are lower than budget because of the wet winter, but our wastewater system continues to perform strongly, better than budget by 5.4%. Our recycled system revenue was higher than budget target by 3.7%, mainly due to the new retrofits, and our connection fee revenue for the third quarter exceeded budget by 7.2%. So that ends my presentation. I'm available for any questions that you might have.
Do you have any questions of Laura?
Oh, great presentation.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Right, with that, let's take about a 10, 12 minute break, and we'll continue on.